Matthew chapter 10. And when he had called unto him his 12 disciples, he gave them power against unclean spirits, to cast them out, and to heal all manner of sickness and all manner of disease. His 12 disciples are, of course, the 12 apostles, and we're going to get their names here in the next couple of verses. But I'm stopping here because, remember the last chapter, he had spoken of the plenteousness of the harvest, and how that there were few laborers to bring it in. And what is the harvest? Is the harvest of souls? Well, the harvest was, a harvest is whatever you sow, you reap. And Jesus had sown forth miracles and had reaped multitudes who wanted to hear him and follow him and learn of his doctrine. Multitudes come, multitudes go. And in the multitudes, there's always a mixture of people. People who are chosen of God, called forth to hear the message of God, and of those who are there for other purposes. The only reason I say that is because I think that in our time we glorify the mere bringing in of multitudes. The mere size of the harvest. But as every harvestman knows, there is more to a harvest than merely fruits. When you take in a harvest, you have to separate. Now we do it mechanically, but you have to separate the wheat from the chaff, the good from the bad. The good has to be separated from that which is unprofitable and that which is worthy to be burned. But all are drawn in. As Jesus says in another place, in this gospel even, there are similar things said that, the kingdom of heaven is like a net cast in the sea, and they bring in both good and bad, and you separate them. Meaning it draws in more people than are intended to be caught. The fisherman goes out intending to catch good fish, but he also brings in bad, and he casts those back into the sea, and the good he takes in for the harvest. And notice in the analogy, it's, what happens to the fish? Well, the good ones get eaten. Right? So don't take analogies too far and try to, because again, the point of the analogy is not the fish's perspective, but it is the fisherman's perspective. It is his determination of what he wants. It is his discrimination, his judgment about what he's keeping and what he's throwing away. So he calls forth the disciples and he gives them power over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal sicknesses so that they can go forth and do the same works he's doing and preach the message of the kingdom, that the king had come. Verse 2, now the names of the 12 apostles are these: the first, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, Philip, and Bartholomew, Thomas, and Matthew, the publican, James, the son of Alphaeus, and Lebbaeus, whose surname was Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanite, and Judas Iscariot, who also betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, go not into the way of the Gentiles, and into any city of the Samaritans enter ye not, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as ye go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out devils, freely ye have received, freely give. Hold there for a moment. Now the names of the 12 apostles. All right, he gives the name Peter, James. I'm not going to focus on the names of the apostles, honestly. Simon the Canaanite, Simon the Zealot, Simon this, Thaddeus, etc. Matthew, who was that tax collector, the publican. James and John and their identities. To me, they are the ones who went before us. They are the apostles that Jesus selected in his time. They are the ones, many of them, who wrote the New Testament. Peter, John. Their speculation, is this James or that James, and this John or James, and John and Jude and Jim. I'm not really into all that end of it, because it's my focus is always on the gospel and the power of God to bring us where we need to be in order to be the heirs of salvation. Because without that, all the rest is worthless. It, you know, any amount of knowledge, you know, oh, I know all the kings of the Bible. I used to memorize the kings of the Old Testament, and I don't regret that or make it light of it, but it is of no profit to me if I perish in the end, if I have not fulfilled Christianity and what my Christianity is supposed to be. You know, work out your own salvation. What is my salvation supposed to look like from God's perspective? What is He ordained that I am to do and to walk in? I need to fulfill that, and that is my focus, and that is what we all need to focus on, is that aspect of our walk. Because, you know, some people say, well, let's focus on helping others. Let's focus on this. Let's focus on that. We'll focus on prophecy. We'll focus on this doctrine and that doctrine. You know, but how can I help other people unless I first focus on improving myself? You know, cast out first the beam that is in thine own eye, so you can see clearly, to cast out the speck that is in the eyes of others. That which blinds us is always more important than that which is blinding someone else. Because unless we see clearly first, we can in no wise help them. So he sends forth the 12 in verse 5, right? Commands them, saying, don't go the way of the Gentiles. What's funny is this, go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. My former teacher used to make a big emphasis on it, and I want to mention it because there's a lot of people who believe that, you know, the lost sheep of the house of Israel are the Anglo-Saxon race and similar European races, white folks, you know, basically, Europeans. And they are the lost sheep of the house of Israel. But in the New Testament, the Europeans are always referred to as Gentiles. The Romans were Gentiles. The Greeks were Gentiles. And, well, what about the further reaches north? Well, I'll tell you what. Jesus said, go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel and do not go the way of the Gentiles or the Samaritans. What I'm saying is that they obeyed him and went to the Jews. The obedience of this commandment was to go over the land of Judea and in Galilee and in all the places that were familiar to them as the place where Israel dwelt. Remember, he had just likened the multitude to sheep without a shepherd. And this was on his mind. They were as sheep without a shepherd. This is verse 36 of the previous chapter. So it makes sense for Jesus to speak of Israel as being these lost sheep. In the New Testament, Israel always refers to the Jews. It does not refer to some other people who have been forgotten or to the northern European races as those being the real Israel.